in relation to the cost, and so the bureaus and staff have done a very good job of keeping the rates as low as possible. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 710 is approved. Can you please read the title for second reading, Council Calendar Item 711?
Accept donation of solar-powered compacting trash cans and recycling units from the Portland Business Alliance Charitable Institute.
Can you please call the roll?
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Well, this is terrific. It does raise the specter of the recyclable cans that would otherwise maybe be sorted by folks. And so I think that's another thing we could start looking at is folks leaving their cans at easily accessible locations, whether they have trash compacting trash cans or not. Aye.
Adams.
We're actually looking at a citywide commercial district implementation of exactly just that. So hopefully in 60 days. Aye. 711 is approved. Can you please read the title for second reading of Council Calendar Item 712?
Vacate a portion of Northwest Princess Drive, northwesterly of Northwest Pleasant Street, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard. Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 712 is approved. Can you please read the title for second reading, Council Calendar Item 713?
Vacate a portion of Alley Block 2, Cook's Addition, north of North Revere Street, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard. Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 713 is approved. Can you please read the title for Emergency Ordinance, Council Calendar Item 714?
Amend the intergovernmental agreement with Columbia County so the county may perform purchase obligations and to extend the time period for the distribution of equipment, supplies, and services procured as a result of Urban Areas Security Initiative Grant, FY 2008.
Council staff is here to answer any questions that council might have. Does council have any questions? Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on Emergency Ordinance 714? So would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard. Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 714 is approved. Can you please read the title for Council Calendar Item 715 on the previous agenda?
Adopt idle reduction policy for all city vehicles and equipment to promote fuel conservation.
City fleet manager are very innovative and assertive. John Hunt will give us a quick overview. My introductory comments will be brief, but passionate and very thankful for your innovation. The city is committed. We are all committed to environmental stewardship and sustainable business practice. Following last week's adoption of the citywide environmental sustainability goals, today we are adopting the idle reduction policy. Last week's agenda item was sustainability goals for city buildings, city infrastructure. This policy gives us a way to reduce vehicle and equipment idle time. It will significantly reduce vehicle emissions, environmental impact, operating costs, and the need to procure fossil fuel. City Fleet, under John's leadership, manages almost 2,400 vehicles and equipment that run on unleaded or biodiesel fuel. The city purchases about 1.9 million gallons of fuel a year. Reducing idle time by just 12%, which is our goal, will reduce our consumption of nearly 228,000 gallons a year of fuel. And just a reminder for everyone, that John is award-winning. He was voted Fleet Manager of the Year for the whole planet, or is it just the United States?
Just the United States.
Next, the world, John.
That's still good.
Including parts of Canada as well.
Parts of Canada. A few provinces. And also, our fleet department is the fourth best fleet in North America. John.
I appreciate that. John Hunt, City Fleet Manager. The item before you today would like to put together an idle reduction policy. I just wanted to let you know that we've gone out to all the different bureaus and had a lot of great feedback from them to create a policy that is very workable so they can do their job, but we reduce the amount of idle time on all of our vehicles. Of course, there are times when they need to run the vehicles to run auxiliary equipment and things, but we think this is a very workable program. Just to give you an example, a Class 8 truck, if it idles 1 hour, will burn 1 gallon of fuel. So if you roll that out per year, that adds up to quite a bit. So if we just use that 228,000 gallons using a calculator that we have, it would save about 2,000 metric tons of greenhouse gases. So it's very important. Also, just wanted to let you know while I'm here that we're working on some other new technologies with vehicles regarding in-cab heaters. So that would eliminate the need to run vehicles to warm the cabs.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's really slick. And what it does as well is you can time it, and it'll actually start up early in the morning and warm engines so that there's less idle time, and also warm the cab so that the windshields will clear quicker. And then also it'll provide warmth throughout the day. Also, we're looking at some hybrid technologies that, like for a bucket truck, where operators would need to go up and trim trees or change streetlights. There's no need for the vehicle to idle. That saves the operator from having to breathe exhaust that's coming out from underneath the engine, and it also, again, will reduce our costs over time and also engine wear and lower maintenance costs as well. So I just wanted you to be aware that this is all part of a much bigger package that we're looking at. So,
thank you, John. Mayor, I have one question, if I could.
Yeah.
John, last winter, the Water Bureau, the Fire Bureau, and TriMet on different occasions used vehicles as sort of mobile winter warming centers for the homeless. And there were also times when they'd staged transportation from one place to another and idled for a period of time and encouraged people to get off the street during inclement weather and get in the bus. I was looking at the administrative rule, and there's some exceptions which you've crafted, but I don't see an exception for that. Is that just carved out under some rule of common sense that this rule would not be intended to apply to that, or do we need a specific exemption?
Well, I think two things. I think within the policy, there's an exemption to power different pieces, but I think the hybrid technology, like on the step vans, is a classic example to do exactly what you're saying, because you can actually warm the vehicle without having the engine run. And so that would really be our intent, is to use that for a warming center. And we've talked to the bureaus about that, and they're okay with that.
Mm-hmm. I see. But if that vehicle wasn't available and we were using these mobile warming centers, and I assume that this rule would not preclude us from continuing to do that during winter emergencies.
That's correct. Yeah.
Commissioner Fritz, or Commissioner Saltzman, then Commissioner Fritz.
Yeah, I was wondering, John, well, first of all, congratulations on your award and on the Fleet's award. But so the rule of thumb for everybody listening on gasoline-powered vehicles or diesel-powered for idling is what?
It's about 5 minutes is what we're saying would be the maximum as a rule of thumb.
So if you're idling more than 5 minutes, or if you're going to be stationary for 5 minutes, turn off the engine. Which
yeah, there's a section in there for that, too. Like if you're waiting in line to pick up a load of asphalt, and so you know for the foreseeable future that you'll be stopped, then you would go ahead and just turn it off.
I'm just talking about regular, ordinary city fleet vehicles being out and about. What's
yeah, the policy states 5 minutes, you know, and so that's... But, you know, a gas engine, you know, within a minute or so, I've seen a lot of information on that, that's probably enough on a small gas engine.
So if you're going to be stationary more than a minute, you're saying turn your engine off? That's better for the environment and fuel efficiency?
Yeah, you bet. But the policy states 5 minutes, so okay. Just to be clear.
Yeah, I noticed last week, I guess the county has signs up now on at least the Hawthorne Bridge saying, please turn your engine off if you're waiting for the bridge to lift.
Yes, exactly.
Commissioner Fritz?
I certainly support this. I'm concerned it doesn't go far enough. And I was doing some Googling last night, and a lot of information seems to say that 10 seconds of idling time is, if you're going to be idling more than 10 seconds, it's more fuel efficient to turn it off than to restart it. So certainly for citizens at home, that's, I think, the rule of thumb that they should go with. Do vehicles running on biodiesel require more engine warm-up time?
It would be virtually the same, whether it's running on ultra-low sulfur diesel or biodiesel. That doesn't make a difference.
And
it runs on biodiesel.
Much happier, yes.
the reason I was Googling, because, I was raised thinking that you warm up the engine, but now that I live in the delightful climate of Oregon, I just turn on my engine and go. I used to live in upstate New York and warmed up the car a little bit, but it seems like that's, as you said, it's more for heating the vehicle rather than for heating the engine, that most engines today are ready to go pretty much immediately. Is that correct?
That's correct. You know, not too long ago, cars had carburetors on them. And then when we moved over to new technologies using, you know, throttle body fuel injection and more computerized type devices, it really enables us to take off and go a little sooner without washing down the cylinder walls, which would happen with, seemed like a lot more often with carbureted equipment.
And in fact, what I was reading is that the catalytic converters work better when you're moving rather than just sitting idling. So that's a better warm-up, is to just get up and go.
Yes.
Because I read that 2 minutes idling is equal to the fuel for one to go 1 mile. And so New York City has an ordinance that limits idling to 60 seconds in school zones. And Vermont, no idling. Even in Vermont, no idling with unattended vehicles. I'm greatly heartened to hear that you have the heating mechanism. But I encourage you to go further and encourage employees to turn off the car within, if they're not going to be moving on within 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see a revised policy. You see how this works first, but then encouraging both employees and citizens to please turn off those engines, even if you're waiting at the drive-thru, if you think it's going to be more than 10 seconds.
Okay. Any other council discussion? Anyone wishes to testify on item 715? Please call the roll.
Second reading.
Move to second reading, sorry, next week. Could you please read the title for item 716?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Portland Development Commission for implementation of critical repairs to Union Station.
Council have any questions or comments on 716? Anyone wish to testify on 716? Move to second reading. Can you please read Emergency Ordinance Council, item 717?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the Portland Development Commission for economic development activities.
Andrew Scott.
Good morning. Andrew Scott, Financial Planning Manager with OMF. This is mostly a housekeeping ordinance. It's the IGA with PDC for Economic Development Services. What this really does is just formalize the general fund payment that we make to PDC. It's roughly $3.5 million. It was already included in the fiscal year 2008-09 budget, which is the fiscal year we're currently in that Council adopted last year. As we've moved to SAP, one of the improvements that we're making in terms of what we do is instead of just looking at what the budget is and then making the journal entry payments, which is what we've done in the past with PDC, we're trying to put in place either intergovernmental agreements with PDC or other outside entities as well that receive money to formalize a little bit more what we're trying to do. It holds everyone a little bit more accountable, and it spells out exactly what the funding is going to be used for. So we are finally doing that. It did take us a little longer than we expected this year. PDC has, in fact, been doing the things that we've already asked them to do. I just want to make that clear for 0809. So this is just going to send them the money that they've been expecting, and it sets out some criteria. We're going to be improving the IGA as well in future years and making it a little bit more detailed and robust.
Discussion from council. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on item 717, emergency ordinance? Mm-hmm. Sue, would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
I'm very supportive of this economic development strategy by the Portland Development Commission and the general fund helping to pay for it, because our tax increment financing strategies for economic development are limited by the amount of that and also by the location of the development strategies. So it's really important for us to support economic development throughout the city. This allocation also supports the Alliance of Portland Neighborhood Business Associations, the Hispanic Chamber, and the African American Chamber. So we're bringing in partners and collaborating between the city and Portland Development Commission and community partners. It's very important. Aye.
Adams.
Thank you. Aye. Approved. Can you please read and have an excused absence at 11 o'clock? So we're going to tick through a few of the emergencies, starting with Sue. Can you please read the title to Emergency Ordinance 718?
Authorize acquisition of approximately 2.5 acres in the Cully neighborhood for a development as a neighborhood park.
Thank you, Mayor. Members and Steve Planchon's joining us, members of the council. We're seeking the green light today from the council to purchase a 2.5-acre parcel in the Cully neighborhood, which is a very park deficient area, and a map of the property is at tab 18 in your notebook. I'm pleased to report that Parks has negotiated a sale agreement at less than the appraised value for the property. We will be using traditional tools to purchase the land, systems development charges, and the city's local share of the Metro 2006 Nature Areas Bond Measure funds. As part of the sales agreement, the seller will lease the property for 2 years. During that time, Parks will develop a long-term plan for the park when the lease terminates. We believe this is a great opportunity to acquire prime land, prime parkland, in an area that has been clearly designated as parks deficient and in need of additional green space. And Steve Planchon, Parks Acquisitions Manager, is here to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions from council? Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on council calendar item 718, emergency ordinance? So would you please call the roll?
Fish.
I want to compliment Steve and the team at Parks. As you can see from the map, this is a highly desirable property. And for us to be able to acquire it in an area desperately in need of additional green spaces is terrific. And to be able to take advantage of a little blip in the economy and get it at a really a good price is also good for the taxpayers. Under the unique agreement we'll have with the seller, who will continue to lease the property for 2 years, we have some breathing room to come up with the funds to actually create the park down the road. And I'll be talking to you more in the months ahead about some options we may have for additional capital dollars to fund our build-out. Again, thanks to the Parks team, and please to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Fish and the Parks team for a new acquisition. That's great. Always welcome. Aye.
Leonard?
Yes, I second that. This is a great buy, and it's sorely needed in that community. Thank you. Aye.
Fritz.
This is really great work, Commissioner Fritz. Thank you to staff. Thank you to the Cully Neighborhood Association. Aye.
Adams.
Good job, Commissioner Fish and the Parks team. This there isn't a neighborhood in the city that doesn't need parkland more. Aye. 718 is approved. We're going to go through a series of second readings. So hang on. Can you please read the title for second reading 719?
Authorized grants to 5 Portland school districts for out-of-school hours youth programs.
Please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 719 is approved. Can you please read the title for council calendar item 727? Second reading.
727. Revise sewer and drainage rates and charges in accordance with the FY 2009-10 sewer user rate study.
Please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 727 is approved. Can you please read the title for second reading, council calendar item 728?
Amend fee schedules for electrical, mechanical, facility permit, land use services, neighborhood inspections, noise control, plumbing, signs, site development, zoning, and certain construction permits.
Please call the roll.
Fish.
First, I want to congratulate Paul Scarlett and his team and for working through these issues during very tough times. And I think what impressed me and all the rest of my colleagues was the fact that there has been strong support from the DRAC and the other community partners who very carefully review this budget and are an independent body. We never want to raise fees during good times or bad times, but these fee increases seem reasonable and scaled. And I also just want to say, as someone who has the benefit of working with Paul on a variety of matters, what a pleasure it is to have him at the helm and his leadership. And as good as he is in this job, I had the great pleasure recently of seeing him at a track meet with some young student athletes, I think from St. Mary's, that he was coaching, and he did an equally wonderful job with them. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
I appreciate those kind and accurate remarks from Commissioner Fish. Paul and Denise Klein is out there as well, who manages our finances. They really set the standard for community engagement, public outreach, and I just could not be prouder of Paul and his team and the work they do on a day-to-day basis. Aye.
Fritz.
I also concur with Commissioner Fish and commend Commissioner Leonard for his leadership on this. These are modest increases which are needed. Aye.
Adams.
Great work. Aye. 278 is approved. Can you please read the title for second reading of Council Calendar Item 730?
Authorize the rates and charges for water and water-related services during the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2009 to June 30, 2010, and fix an effective rate.
Please call the roll.
Fish.
This may be the only chance I have today to just acknowledge and thank Randy for the work he did on the McCall's project, which, of course, is completely unrelated to the matter before us, but it at least is at least germane enough to not be ruled out of order. I had the pleasure of joining a few thousand other Portlanders last Friday, the dedication of the new McCall's and the new water feature that's been restored and the building, which has been brought back to his historically sensitive roots. The Curtis Salgado concert was a once-in-a-lifetime. It felt like actually having our own private concert. It's like having Curtis Salgado in your own backyard. As good as he is on the radio, I mean, to be with him live in a small venue setting was amazing. I don't think I've seen a fireworks display to rival that one. I think he even tops what we see in the 4th of July. And we kept thinking it was going to end, and it kept having a series of, you know, false endings and then more explosions. And the Rose, I think even for people that were skeptical going in about the impact of the Rose, what struck me, and Randy and I talked about it, was that, you know, the pictures we saw in the paper and the diagrams were never really to scale. And when you saw the Rose, which has been placed on an outlying building, which was been leased to a nonprofit, which will be leasing bicycles, when you saw the Rose on that building, it was actually very modest in scale and scope. But I think that, and it's beautiful, and I think one of the real tributes to what Randy accomplished is that, as with the 4th of July, by the time it came, by the time that the current Rose Festival princess and I were directed to turn the Rose on, which was a great honor, the Veracast East Bank Esplanade was packed with people who had come out to be able to say they were the first in our community to see this rose illuminated on an evening. And I think it's also safe to say that in addition to having a new home for the Rose Festival, it will be quickly become the premier place for receptions and greeting dignitaries who come to our community. It's just an outstanding place. I was very pleased to join with the mayor and Commissioner Leonard at that event, and I think it really was superb work and will be a significant credit to you, Commissioner Leonard, when your whole body of work is assessed in 20 or 30 years. So I'm very pleased to join you. Shifting from a less controversial item to that what we had before us, I've been struck by some of the commentary on the proposed rate increases for water and water-related services. And I think that to the extent there have been some critics out there, the point that has moved me is the fact that people have overlooked the fact that for years our rates did not necessarily reflect what our actual costs were. And as you noted, and as your highly competent director noted when we got together last time, what we're doing is catching up a little bit from the past when the rates should have gone up to reflect their actual costs. And we're also responding to some other challenges, some of which, frankly, have been imposed on us. While we may share the aspirations, we have some unfunded mandates that we have to respond to as well. No one likes to pay more for utility rates, me included, but I think the case has been made that these increases are prudent and reasonable and well-documented. And again, while they won't please everybody, it is our job to set rates that maintain enterprise bureaus operating at peak efficiency. I think the case has been made, and therefore I vote aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I understand the Water Bureau has a biographer on staff that's working to assess Commissioner Leonard's body of work.
Co-funded with the Bureau of Environmental Services.
I think I found that when I was pouring through the Water Bureau's budget.
No, it's actually a team of people.
That was just a joke.
On loan
that
from,
was just
on
a joke.
Loan from the Bureau
it's
of Environmental Services.
Right. Well, I'm going to support this ordinance, but I do want to say that I do think a rate increase of 17.9% is not sustainable, and it is a lot. And I know we can relativize it as much as we want and say, you know, it's related to cost of service, it's smaller than a cell phone bill and all that stuff. But 17.9% is still a big number. And I appreciate the discussion last week when we had the first reading on this ordinance, that we will have a chance as a council to review next year the rate increases, particularly as it relates to decisions that will be made or need to be made around filtration. I think it's been a while since the council looked at this. Circumstances have changed. There's a big difference in cost between UV filtration and direct filtration, some $300 million. That's something I think the council needs to weigh in on again. And as I said, it's a large rate hike, and it's just something that imposes a certain amount of sticker shock. And I say this as commissioner in charge of Bureau of Environmental Services, and I realize on a per dollar amount, even though our rate increase is 6.5%, it's a larger dollar amount than it is for water. But nevertheless, I don't think a 17.9% increase is sustainable in the long run, nor wise. So I look forward to a more robust discussion as we look at the budget next year and the rates. Aye.
Leonard.
First, I want to point out, in light of Commissioner Fish's remarks for Commissioner Saltzman's benefit, that Curtis Salgado and the fireworks were paid for by funds I raised privately. They were not any way related to the Water Bureau rates. And to that extent, I want to thank Pacific Power and the Portland Firefighters Association, who made the show and the display possible. I agree with Commissioner Saltzman that this rate increase is large, and we need to work to keep it as low as possible. And to that end, I want to explain a couple things that we're doing as part of this approval package today under the leadership of David Schaff, who's doing an outstanding job guiding the LT2 issue as responsibly as can be. We, of course, have asked for a waiver from the EPA for the requirement to have a treatment system installed. And to make a very long story short, we have been working for 2 years to develop the criteria, have spent considerable amount of ratepayer dollars to do that. And just recently, they literally changed the rules in midstream, making it nearly impossible for us to achieve a waiver through their administrative process. So we have focused solely now on getting legislative relief. We have gotten great help from Senator Wyden's office in the past, but Senator Merkley has really stepped up to the plate. I've had three conference calls with him. He's introducing legislation to provide us that legislative relief that we need. He and his staff are sitting at meetings with the EPA in Washington that when that is set up, I will go to meet with. He has just really been an outstanding advocate, and want to thank him for that. The decision as to what kind of treatment system, if our legislative efforts fail, is something the council should consider. Commissioner Saltzman's correct. UV system is cheaper. However, the task force he appointed in 2002, made up of citizens, recommended a filtration system, and in fact, a more expensive filtration system than the one we're recommending. So we're kind of taking it at the middle of the road. But that's a discussion we need to have another day, and it needs to be a thoughtful one. I appreciate the work David and his team does. They more than any other bureau in this city, are under intense scrutiny, not just from the federal government, but from a very active citizenry at Mount Tabor. And they requite their integrity on a daily basis by being transparent. Any document that one wants relative to LT2, whether it's an internal document or external document, is posted on their website. They have an outstanding blog that people go to and get up-to-date information about the Water Bureau and any kind of service impacts that may be occurring due to breaks or any one of a number of things. I'm very proud of the Water Bureau and the work David does. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, David Schaff and Commissioner Leonard, for all the information that's been provided to help me understand this in my first budget cycle. It's been challenging. I'm concerned that the Water Bureau has spent down its reserves from $40 million to $12 million over the past few years. I understand the rationale for that, and that needs to be addressed. Also, that deferred maintenance is a major factor that needs to be brought forward, and I'd like to see a schedule for how to catch up on that. The Water Bureau has decreased their operating budget by 6%, which is commendable. And there's concern that there's a wide disparity of opinion between the Water Bureau staff and the Portland Utility Review Board Citizen Review. And I would like to see greater concurrence next year and or a greater understanding of why there's such a difference between the Utility Review Board suggesting 5% and the staff 18%. But the staff did provide me with a breakout of the charges. I couldn't see a particular place where more cuts were warranted. I am interested in the 4% inflation rate, which Director Schaaf explained would go into youth work programs for the summer. I'd like to see a report at the end of the summer on the number of youth employed and how much of the budget went to that. In fact, I think citywide, as we look at youth employment, we need to do that in every bureau, and I will do it in mine. So next year, I hope for more information, and I'm also very glad to hear that we will have a work session and a hearing on the treatment options for the Bull Run watershed. I think that's very important. It can't be decided only as far as in a rate hearing. But for the reasons I've stated, I do support this proposal.
Adams.
Difficult, controversial, and very necessary. These rate increases were not considered lightly. I'm convinced that if we artificially continue to keep low the water rates, that we're just simply pushing off more expensive, necessary projects to the future. So never popular. Never easy, and never taken lightly, but I support him. Aye. So approved. Commissioner Fritz has a motion to make.
I move to suspend the rules so that we can reconsider resolution, which was item 677, on asking the federal government to update studies on potential health impacts of radio frequency wireless emissions in light of significant increases in wireless use.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion on this motion? Sue, would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Adam. Sam. Yes, me. Aye.
Wow.
Whoa.
I'm following along with Sue. I need some more caffeine. We are now considering previous item. Can you read the title? Can you read the title for previous council item 677? Do you have the title?
677.
Yeah.
Request the federal government to update studies on potential health effects of radio frequency wireless emissions in light of proliferation of wireless use.
Is there any discussion on this issue? Commissioner Fritz.
Just briefly, we did vote on this last week 3-0, but Commissioner Leonard and Commissioner Fish weren't able to be here. This is a first of its kind in the nation to ask the FCC to take another look at whether wireless facilities have health impacts. It's important. It's coming from our citizens. And I encourage our citizens to write to our congressional delegation because after we pass this again, the ball will be in your court to make sure that the congressmen know what your concerns are, and there'll be some information about that on my website.
Any additional discussion from council? Anyone in the room that'd like to testify on previous agenda item 677? Sue, would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Well, first, Commissioner Fritz, I want to thank you for proposing that we suspend the rules and have a chance to vote on this to give you an unambiguous 5-0 vote in support of this ordinance, a resolution.
Resolution.
Resolution. And I regret that I was not here last week and instead, as you know, was attending my daughter's induction to the National Honor Society, an honor that eluded me during my high school career. And maybe further
proof. It continues to, by the way.
Maybe further proof that that there was a mix-up in the hospital, but I was pleased to be there to celebrate that moment. And
you have to stay because you have to vote.
I know, but it's not quick.
But he's talking. Can you wait 10 minutes?
I will simply say that.
You can make the rest of your comments on the other ordinances.
No more than 15. No more than 15.
Not so subtle hints.
Aye.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Saltzman.
Aye again.
Yes.
Leonard.
Well, and I want to point out that there's a real practical problem here. Vera Katz actually recused herself from hearings due to this issue that Commissioner Fritz is focused on because she adamantly believed that cell phone towers caused cancer. And so I really appreciate the opportunity to vote on this again. This is a very good resolution and commend Commissioner Fritz for it.
Fish.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye.
All right, you got it. 5-0.
We'll now go to what item are we on, Sue? I'm completely lost. Are we on? I think we're on item 729.
Or we could go back to 720.
Yeah, 720.
Okay, 720.
Back to the beginning.
Well, didn't we do 720?
No.
No.
Oh, we didn't. It's an emergency ordinance, item 720.
Authorize the Bureau of Environmental Services to acquire permanent easements necessary for construction of the East Side Combined Sewer Overflow Tunnel Project number 7594 through exercise of the city's eminent domain authority.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. President. This ordinance authorizes the city to exercise its eminent domain authority to acquire permanent easements, several narrow easements from private property, more or less running from the what we call the Opera Shaft, where the Portland Opera is located, south along more or less the southeast 17th alignment for construction of the East Side Big Pipe or the East Side CSO project.
Any questions?
Has anybody objected?
No, and the owners, property owners, will be compensated and to be determined if we have to exercise eminent domain. I don't think we're actually at that point yet, but this gives us that backstop.
So we're not in a hostile situation at this point?
Not yet.
Would this
hopefully not.
Would this possibly include any signs?
No. This is
unfortunate. There are further questions.
Would you care to amend it?
That actually reminds me, my if I may, my favorite comment on Friday night was when Mr. Ramsey, yeah, of Ramsey Signs, got up and he was donating to the city the neon rose, and he turned to Commissioner Leonard and he said, "Now, Randy, I'm giving it to you. You don't have to condemn it."
You forgot to mention who was the owner of the Made in Oregon sign.
Yeah, the owner of the Made in Oregon sign.
Yeah. Sue, please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, I learned on the Planning Commission that there are hostile eminent domain proceedings and there are friendly eminent domain proceedings, and I understand the rationale for this one. Aye.
Passes. 721.
Extend contract with CH2M Hill for additional work and compensation for the Fano Basin Pump Station Pressure Line, Garden Home Section, project number E08293.
Mr. Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. President. This ordinance authorizes the city to extend a contract with the consulting firm CH2M Hill to complete design of the Garden Home section of the Fano Basin pressure line. This contract extension allows, the pressure line has failed several times, is not reliable, and must be replaced. This contract extension allows CH2M Hill to complete the additional design work as they have unique knowledge of this project from their previous work.
Any questions? Sue, please, anybody want to testify? If not, Sue, please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Where are we at now, Sam?
722.
Okay, so we have all of those to go because we jumped around there in a little. Okay, 722.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Oregon Department of Agriculture to prepare an invasive animal assessment to determine the status and threats and to identify and guide management actions.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Okay, this ordinance authorizes a contract with the Oregon Department of Agriculture in the amount of $9,500 to conduct an invasive animal assessment. I didn't know we had invasive animals. I just thought we had invasive plants, but I've learned something today. And this did arise out of the summit that was held in, I think when Commissioner Adams was BES commissioner, to identify the current status of invasive animals and threats to the environment and to identify management actions.
Any questions?
I have a quick question.
No, we had invasive animals.
Well, Commissioner Saltzman is saying that we didn't have invasive Are we talking about dogs or mussels or cows or what?
Well, actually, that's a great question, Commissioner. Out of that conference with our stakeholders.
Your name is?
My name is Matt Grum with Commissioner Saltzman's office. Out of that conference, that was actually the question that was posed, is what animals may be out there that are invasive. And so that's exactly what the scope of this contract will be, is using the Department of Agriculture to do that study and to get out there in our community in the wild areas and find out what animals are out there and what impacts they're having on the plant life and our community, and then coming back to us to say, hey, this is what we've identified, and now you need to create a plan to take care of it. So we'll find out what's out there.
And is it in the forested habitat adjacent to the in the watersheds, or is it in the rivers?
Basically, our watershed plan guides everything in the Bureau of Environmental Service. So this will be done through the watershed department, BES. They'll be looking at a lot of the natural areas. And our understanding is that spot between the natural area and the suburban area is really where the animals, cats, dogs, people in yards are having the impact. But we'll find out.
What would it include the deep river vessels that bring in?
You know, actually, I do not know that answer, but we can find out about that, yeah.
It's just interesting.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Some part of it, you bet.
Further questions? Anybody sign up to testify?
No.
722 passes to a second reading. 723.
Authorize contract and provide for payment for the construction of the Bybee Sewer Rehabilitation Project.
Mr. Saltzman.
Thank you. Mr. President, this authorizes the city to enter into a contract with the lowest responsive bidder for the Bybee Sewer Project. Construction cost is estimated to be $2.6 million. It's in our budget. We estimate it will create about 37 jobs. I urge approval.
Anybody signed up to testify? If not, 723 passes to a second reading. 724.
Authorize a contract and provide for payment for the construction of the Northeast Skidmore Alameda Sewer Rehabilitation Project, number 08597.
This is also an ordinance to authorize us to enter into a contract with the lowest responsive bidder. The estimated cost is $1.2 million. We have the funds in our budget. We estimate about 16 jobs will be created by this.
Any questions? Anybody signed up to testify? If not, passes to a second reading. 725.
Authorize contract and provide for payment for the construction of the Lentz Sanitary Sewer Extension Project.
Mr. Saltzman.
Again, authorizing the city to enter into a contract with the lowest responsible bidder for the Lentz Sewer Extension Project. This is a project that we estimate to be about $2.2 million. The funds are in our budget, and we estimate about 30 jobs will be created from this contract. I urge approval.
Any questions? Go ahead.
So I just read this yesterday because of the short week we had, and so I have a question about sounds like the Mid-County sewer connections. Are there objections from local residents? How long do they have to hook up? What are the costs involved to the residents?
Good morning. My name is Scott Gibson. I'm the design division manager over at BES, responsible for preparation of the plans. As you suggested, this is a sewer extension project. This is an area of Lentz which is not served by sewer. The property owners have cesspools, and many of them are reaching their end of their useful life and will need to be replaced. They will not be allowed to replace those cesspools, so we need to get in and get the sewer service to the residents prior to their failing. They will need to connect, and the cost and fees have been established for what the cost of those fees will be. I can't give you that information right now as far as what the actual costs are for connection, but I could come back and present.
Are we offering assistance to homeowners to be able to do that, or some kind of payment plan?
Yeah, payment plans are allowed, low-interest loans, and they're given a certain amount of time to connect.
And has there been public outreach to let people know this is coming?
Absolutely. This project's been in underway for quite a while. Each and every property owner has been contacted about where the actual service would be, that the project is coming. They've been given information on the cost and fee. And it's my understanding that it's pretty well supported. The project's pretty well supported in the neighborhood. It's going to facilitate redevelopment of properties. There's a lot of properties out in this area that are underdeveloped and underutilized, oversized lots with one house that could serve multiple houses. But because of the inadequate sewer system, the redevelopment in the area has been hindered.
Terrific. Thank you very much.
Further questions?
Thanks.
Anybody signed up to testify? If not, 725 passes to a second reading. 726.
Authorize a contract and provide for payment for construction of the Swan Island CSO Pump Station Phase 2 project.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. President. This ordinance also authorizes the city to enter into a contract with the lowest responsible bidder for Phase 2 of the Swan Island Combined Sewer Overflow Pump Station. The Bureau of Environmental Services has completed the first phase of construction in 2006. This facility pumps sewage from the West Side Big Pipe to the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant. This work will involve additional work to accommodate the flows when the East Side Big Pipe goes online in 2011. The construction cost is just over $11 million, and it equates to about 154 family wage jobs. This is the first reading.
Any questions? Anybody signed up to testify on 726? If not, it passes to a second reading. Item 727.
Oh, yeah. We're on
729.
Oh, we did that. Sorry.
Authorize the mayor and the commissioner in charge to sign a water sales agreement with the city of Sandy.
Thank you, members of the council. I did want to just take a moment to, this is really quite an achievement for the Water Bureau. A little over 2 years ago, I got a call from the mayor of Sandy, Oregon, Linda Malone, who said that for a variety of reasons, their water source was at capacity, which is basically the Salmon River, and that to be able to increase the amount they take out of the Salmon River would require really some Herculean efforts to get by state and federal regulations in terms of water being drawn down to the point that affects fish habitat. So they asked me to come out and begin talking with them about signing a contract with Portland Water Bureau to buy water, understanding it's been over 25 years since we've had a new customer come on board. So I went out, had preliminary meetings with them. Mayor Malone was interested enough to convene the entire council. We escorted them up to the Bull Run, gave them a tour. We had a nice lunch up at Bear Creek House, which was the original engineer's house that constructed the dam at Bull Run. And that culminated in negotiations that ended in November of 2008 with the signing by Mayor Malone of a contract to buy water from the Water Bureau. Commencing in 2013, they will buy at a minimum of a half million gallons a month, up to up to 3 million gallons a day. And the nice thing is what this allows Sandy to do is to expand and create more development, whereas they had been limited because of the amount of water they had. This will give them additional resources. It has the effect, obviously, of lowering our water rates, or at least reducing the amount of increase we'd otherwise have to ask for, because we have one more wholesale customer helping pay the infrastructure costs and buying water that we otherwise might not use. David, do you want to add anything?
Good morning. I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Water Bureau. Just a couple of minor comments that contrast this contract to our other wholesale contracts. As Commissioner Leonard said, Sandy is our first new wholesale customer since the city of Tualatin approximately 25 years ago. This is a slightly different agreement than the ones that we signed with our other 19 wholesale customers 2 years ago. They did ask for a 20-year agreement, much like our East Side customers, and they we have agreed to a mutual extension for another 20 years at the end of that first 20-year cycle. So it's different than our other contracts that go 5-year in blocks afterwards. Sandy will need to spend between $8 and $12 million on infrastructure before they can get a drop of water from us. So they are going, there is a 5-year window period in this contract from 2008 to 2013 for them to design and build their infrastructure that they will need to meet, to build. We will also be required to build some infrastructure as well. We can serve them the 500,000 gallons a day today if they had the pipe connecting to our system. But we will need to upsize what we refer to as our back line, which will actually benefit us and our other East Side customers. So over the next 5 years, we'll be engaged in upsizing that back line as well, so that they can, so that Sandy can be provided the full 3 million gallons a day if and when they decide to take that. Because their improvements are to be bond financed, there is a clause in the contract that terminates the agreement if Sandy is unable to finance the infrastructure improvements by November 1, 2013, either due to a voter remonstrance of a revenue bond sale or other reasons beyond their control. So those are the primary differences. The other small difference is that in the guaranteed purchase amount, we allowed them to start at one half of an MGD, 500,000 gallons a day, building up to 3 million gallons a day. And the reason we did that was because of the infrastructure that they were going to have to build. After that 3 MGD, they will have to do what all of our other wholesale customers do, and that is either buy reserve capacity in the future or pay us up front for a minimum amount. Those are the primary differences between this agreement and our other 19 wholesale contracts.
Thank you. Questions?
So who's paying for the upgrading of our side of the system?
Both the City of Portland ratepayers and the wholesale customers downstream who will benefit from it. There is a formula in all of our wholesale agreements that talk about the shared benefit and the shared costs of infrastructure. So the East Side customers who will receive water, and most of them do, from that back streamline. So it'll be shared with us.
And that's in proportion to the benefit between
yes.
the two jurisdictions?
And it serves us. It serves our Lusted Hill facility. It serves our Sandy River Station. It serves us all the way back to Headworks.
And is the rate that we're selling the same as the other customers, the other wholesale customers?
The rate will be set in the same fashion, since they're not taking water and probably won't for 5 years. It will be set the same way it is now. They'll have probably rates similar to what Rockwood and Gresham do, since they will use the least amount of our infrastructure.
So we're not setting the rate now?
No.
That comes later?
No.
Okay. And do we know the maximum peak demand that could occur from them? Do we have the capacity?
Right now, it's that 3 MGD. That is the maximum. It's both the floor and the ceiling, which is consistent with all of our other wholesale agreements. If they want more than that 3 MGD at some point, there will be a negotiation to determine whether or not we can supply it, because it's a guarantee. We are absolutely guaranteeing we can provide this amount. And frankly, that's years down the road before we get to that point.
And does our capacity to supply that amount depend on the tanks and the other things that we're doing in the rest of our system?
No.
Thank you.
This is all before that.
Right.
If we did nothing else to improve our system, we could do it today.
We could provide them the 500,000 gallons a day now, but we will have to upsize our back line to do the 3 MGD.
We don't need any of the kind of storage?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Anybody signed up to testify? If not, passes to a second reading. Thank you, David. Item 731.
Adopt street priorities and form for wireless applications for siting private wireless facilities in city right-of-way.
Commissioner Fritz.
So this is the second reading for this, and I'm very proud of the cable staff and the citizens and the industry folks who came in to testify and who didn't come in to testify. It was really great that we were able to reach near consensus by the time we got to the public hearing in the evening last week. This series of contracts, which are all identical, will bring in an additional $90,000 in new revenue per year just on the existing poles. We have 60 existing poles, and there'll also be additional revenue if new poles come in. So it's another example of our 9 staff in the cable office bringing in significant revenue for the general fund.
Please call the roll, Sue.
Fish.
Before I was so rudely interrupted earlier, I was explaining.
I knew there was pent up demand there.
I was explaining.
On pause.
I was responding to an ad hominem attack from a colleague, I was explaining that this issue has been a flashpoint for a long time in our neighborhoods. And while Amanda, you and the council informal that you led not long ago helped us understand that the problem is small in terms of the number of poles that are out there, it is large in terms of the impact on people's lives. And we've learned that in neighborhoods throughout the city, but particularly in Northeast Portland, where a modification of an existing pole can have significant consequences, not just to the adjacent property owner, but to people within a couple of blocks radius. So this has been it's been percolating, it's been a problem, but no one's really identified a workable solution. You came into office, took over this bureau, focused a lot of attention. I think what you've come up with is a marvelous compromise that I think is likely to significantly address a lot of the community concerns. And it does so through some very common sense measures which encourage the location of wireless facilities on co-located poles and in areas where they don't have the same impact, like along commercial corridors. So I want to congratulate you for your leadership on this. And I think this is really good news for people throughout our community who have had negative experiences with these kinds of siting. This will not end the fight because there are complex legal issues, and as we learn almost every month, there's a new court decision which changes the ground rules a little bit. But I'm heartened that with a new president and a new FCC and with at least an understanding that some measure of local control, as long as it doesn't flower into obstruction, is not unreasonable, that we may see some balance in the rulemaking out of Washington. This would not happen, Commissioner Fritz, without your leadership, and I congratulate you, and I think it's a good solution, and to your team at Cable and Franchise. Aye.
Salzman.
Well, I want to also commend Commissioner Fritz for coming up with a good policy of street prioritization for the future location of wireless facilities in the public right-of-way. This is a good step forward. It's a very well thought out with maps attached and everything. I also wanted to recognize David Solos of the Office of Cable and Franchise Management and also Ben Walters, our capable telecommunications attorney, plus other things. This is a great policy, and I think it's very responsive to concerns that citizens have raised within the legal confines of which we operate. Pleased to support it. Aye.
Leonard.
And I very much agree. Having had this bureau, I know how vexing this issue is and how challenging it is to find a balance with the what some might argue are unreasonable, if not irrational, federal rules surrounding it. So I appreciate the balance you've achieved. Aye.
Fritz.
This is an example of the benefit of a little bit more time to do some more public process coming to consensus. And I appreciate all of my colleagues last fall recognizing that that was the appropriate way to go when this came before you before. Cut short my comments on the health resolution. As a registered nurse, it's exciting to me that was one of my first actions to ask the federal government to take another look, and that we do have citizens who are concerned about potential health impacts from wireless facilities in this resolution, and I appreciate everybody supporting it so that we can vote on it unanimously 5-0. It's important for citizens to have that opportunity. I'm also happy with this set of regulations. I have to keep saying that it's code. It's not code. It's contracts and it's application forms, because this is in the right-of-way and it's different from land use, which has been my previous area of expertise. But it's consistent with our land use code. It's consistent with our tree policy code in that we discussed whether or not to in what instances would we require a street tree with a new pole. And the consensus was, well, we like street trees for many reasons, not just because they screen, but because they have multiple other benefits. And so this policy and these applications will require either a tree or payment to the tree fund that goes into parks. These are 3-year contracts, and we are committing to continue to work on them. If we find that there are ongoing issues, we will take care of them. We will do another amendment, and we will continue to work on it. I do also thank Ben Walters in the city attorney's office. Staff in the Bureau of Development Services were extremely helpful, both in figuring out what we could and couldn't do. Paul Van Orden, the noise officer, has been exceptionally diligent. And finally, Margarita Molina in my office, who came to me from the Portland Development Commission, having worked on housing issues, just dove right into this tricky issue and was instrumental in finding this excellent solution. So thank you to everybody involved. Aye.
731 is adopted. 732, second reading, vote only. Please call the roll, sir.
Do I need to read the title?
Yes.
Amend and extend term of right-of-way agreement granted to AT&T Wireless Services of Oregon, Inc. to build and operate wireless facilities within the city streets.
Thank you. Please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Sausman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
732 is adopted. Please read 733.
Amend and extend term of temporary revocable permit to Clearwire USA, US LLC to use city streets to provide wireless broadband internet access services and establish terms and conditions.
Please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.